So we discover the rod. And so some of us could be new parents, and you discover the value of the rod, how powerful it is. And you go around the house with a rod. And you come back from work, the children want to have a little fun, you say, quiet! And they quiet. And you say, kebelakang pusing! They kebelakang pusing. And I mean, you have a real rod, a real discipline. But there's no more fun in the family. There's no more joy in the family. And every time they do something, that rod is for punishment. And they are punished for many, many things. As a result, we forgot that the rod is not just for punishment. Punishment without explanation amounts back to square one. When a child doesn't know why they are caned, what they did wrong, and what they could have done better, we haven't actually trained a child. We have only judged the child. And so we have to get back to the mainstream, where, like God, you notice as God disciplined His people and corrected them, God says, look here, here are all the wrong things that has happened, and these are the judgments that will come. And then God says, you should have been like this, you should have been like that. And God explains to them, and how much like the Father He is. And He is an example that we could follow, and there are many principles that we could follow in our personal life, in our family life, so that we have a balanced perspective, and we don't move to either extremes at all. One day I was talking to, there was some time ago, a teacher who was teaching children, and then I noticed that the children were losing the zeal and the zeal for life. And so I was talking to one of the child, and says the child doesn't want to go to that class anymore. I say, why? And I had to sit down with the child and find out, and found that the child says, every time I go, I get whacked. And so I determined to have a word and with that teacher, and it was in a Sunday school situation. And so I found out what was happening in the teacher's life and what went wrong. We want to be balanced, we want to hear both sides. And then the teacher passed to me a stack of books, and say, could I look through them? I looked through them, and I found that every one of those books, especially one of those books, one book that she was following straight to the letter of the law, and that book advocate punishment for almost everything, every small thing. Then I realized that she was following the book literally, and she was not thinking through the truths herself. She was just following it. And as a result, the whole atmosphere changed. So I went back, went to my closet where we have about 30 to 40 books on family, and I pulled out about 6 or 7, photocopy the important sections on the balance, on discipline, compile it all together and talk about how discipline must be with love, how discipline needs to have explanation, how the purpose of discipline is to train, not to punish, and all these things, and then give her and say, could you read through this? And so after she read through the thing, then she came, and then I watched the child, and this time the child enjoyed going to school. Once in a while still get disciplined, but it was not every day facing a discipline. It was not like going to school is like going to be caned every day. So the reason I mention it is because I notice in our Christianity the danger of the slant. You see, 20 years ago we swing the other side. Just as in the world, you know, they began to get rid of the rod, so Christianity start leaning this side. And now the world discovers the rod and discipline. So in case we start swinging that side again,
the pendulum swings. So we got to get it back to the plumb line, the center, and have a very disciplined approach and a very balanced approach. So here we have in the book of Micah, God the Father speaking to the nation of Israel. And I could see how He speaks to them with love. He pleads with them. And He also has to tell them about judgment coming. And for many people, when they read these kind of books, or the Old Testament book, and read about judgment of God, some people who are on the extreme of what I call an extreme understanding of the love of God, they can't see how the love of God can be reconciled with the judgment of God. You say, how can a loving God allow such things to happen? But they forget that if love is not guided by justice, it is not true love. And a love that is not guided by principles of law and order, it is not true love. We all know that as long as there is a need to relate to another human being, we need a principle to follow so that we could live together in harmony. So if God, as the judge and ruler of the universe, doesn't allow justice or judgment to come upon those like the Israelites say in the book of Micah, it is a reflection of God too. Then the other question can be asked by the other camp. How is it that the justice of God would allow the evil to continue? So we realize there is a balance there. There is a balance. If, for example, let's just take an example as an illustration. If in society as a whole, a criminal is not punished, then society will become more evil. If somebody murders, kills, robs, and then they are caught, and all they say is, naughty, naughty, and they are let loose, then they go ahead and they kill and they do all kinds of bad things, and they are caught again, naughty, naughty, we like you, but naughty, naughty. After some time, the whole of society will become criminals. So, in order to have a balance, the evildoers have to be caught and have to be remanded under justice. It's not because there is no love. It is because of the love of all. The common good of all. That is why when you read these books like Micah and you see the judgment of God, understand. If God doesn't do anything, He also doesn't demonstrate His true love. And God has to do something. So God in Micah chapter 1 and 2 pronounces judgment. He pronounces judgment on the nation of Israel. And He speaks about all those things. We will take key verses here. And verse 5. Verse 4 and 5. The mountains shall melt under him, and the valleys will split like wax before the fire, like waters poured down a steep place. All this is for the transgression of Jacob, and for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? What are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? So God says, all this is because the house of Israel reap what they sow. And a just God must allow the due recompense of their evil. And a lot of other things are mentioned here. It says in verse 8, therefore I will wail and howl, I will go strip and naked, I will make a wailing like the jackals and a moaning like the ostriches. For her wounds are incurable, For it has come to Jacob, to Judah. It has come to the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem. In other words, the judgment that will come upon Jerusalem and Judah. Then in Micah chapter 1, he goes into a poetic prophecy. And we don't quite get that when you read the English, but when you read the Hebrew, it's there. Like for example, from verse 10 right up to verse 16, it's a very poetic prophecy. It says here, tell it not in Gath, weep not at all in Beth Ephrah, roll yourself in the dust. There is a play on the Hebrew words. You see, Gath means tell town, or talking town, a town that tells and talks. So he's saying, tell it not in Tell Town. And then Beth Ephrah in verse 10 means weep down or weeping down. And so he says, weep not in Weep Down. And then he says in verse 11, at the other town called Shepher, in verse 11, pass by in naked shame, ye inhabitants of Shepher. Shepher means beauty. Beautiful. And then he says, they are in naked shame. And then in verse 11, the inhabitant of Zaanan does not go out. Zaanan means going out or marching out. Marching. So he's saying, and the inhabitants of marching town shall not march. And all throughout chapter 1, in the second portion here, it is a poetic way of prophesying. In our local way, it would be just like saying, like, it's only example, alright? It's just like saying, like, I had to find neutral illustration. Like, it would be like saying, like, Pulau Pinang has no more Pinang. Or Kuala Lumping has no more Kuala. Right? It's the same way of saying it. So he has picked many, many towns, and he has used the names of the town in the prophecy. It's a very poetic play on the words in the Hebrew. So in Micah chapter 1, he continues in verse 11, Beth Ezel moans. Its place to stand is taken away. Beth Ezel means the neighborhood town, alright? And its neighborhood stand is taken away. And then in verse 12, for the inhabitant of Meroth, which means evil, and it says the inhabitants lack good. The inhabitants of evil are evil. And then in verse 13, O inhabitants of Lachish, harness the chariot to the swift steeds. And he's saying that the inhabitants are Lachish, which means horse town. So to horse town, you better get ready all your horses because judgment is coming. And then in verse 14, therefore you shall give presents to Moresheth Gath, the houses of Azib shall be a lie to the kings of Israel. Azib means lie, the lying down. So the inhabitants of lying down shall lie to the kings of Israel. And so all these places are a play on the Hebrew word in his prophecy. Basically, he just prophesied judgment that will come. We all realize that the final judgment came during the time of Jeremiah, which was many years later. So Micah was prophesying way back, before Jeremiah came to the scene, about judgment that was coming, warning the Israelites to turn back unto God. Chapter 2 is also still filled with judgment, and gives many reasons for the judgment. It says in verse 1, woe to those who devise iniquity and work out evil on their beds. At morning light they practice it because it is in the power of their hand. They covered fields and take them by violence, also houses and seize them. So they oppress a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. And then God pronounced judgment again in verse 3. Behold, against this family I am devising disaster, from which you cannot remove your necks, nor shall you walk haughtily, for this is an evil time. Notice again that every time there is a judgment, in the book of Micah is very clear. The curse causeless does not come. There is a cause behind every curse. In the book of Proverbs, let's look at over to the book of Proverbs.